This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. I'm your host, Jay Koronick. I'm here with the news director, our news director, Kevin. And pretty warm out there, Kevin? Oh, let's get you. This is the mic check, too. That's why we do this. Go ahead.
There we go. Yeah, no, warm isn't the word. Melting. Yeah.
Well,
it's the word.
It's predicted to be 100 degrees today, and I won't make any comments about global warming. But still, that may be a record. I'm not sure. I know yesterday it would have been a record if it was 98, and it came pretty close. But yeah, so we're trying to keep cool in here. We just turned our fan on a little higher and redirected it in the studio because we have a special guest, and we don't want to get him too hot and bothered. But hey, it's political season, so you got to get a little bit active and start campaigning, knocking on doors. So I want to say WHFR welcome to Karen Jacobson. Karen, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Okay, I didn't hear that at all. So
okay.
Move that closer, maybe.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, I'm good. Thank you.
Did that work? Yeah, okay. I think we're all set now. Karen Jacobson is on the Republican primary ballot. That's coming up quickly, August 7th. And I need to tell you folks is that if you're not registered to vote yet, and you say, well, I don't want to register to vote. There may not be anyone I want to vote. There probably won't be anyone I want to vote for. Well, you don't even have the choice of being able to not vote for anyone if you're not even registered. You see how, see what I'm saying? The logic is if you're not registered, you can't on either August 7th or in November even choose. It's not meaningful choose to not vote for everybody because you couldn't vote anyway. I'm told that the clerk offices throughout the state of Michigan will be open through Monday afternoon. So if you're not registered to vote, get on down there. And today, too, I guess Friday until, I don't know, 4:30 perhaps. Of course, City Hall is still at Schaefer and Michigan Avenue. And go on down to the city clerk's office with your various ID cards and get on registered if you're a person in Dearborn. Karen Jacobson, you're, again, running in the Republican primary. You have just one person who we interviewed last week who is challenging you for that. And so we definitely want to find out your background. And so tell us a little bit about yourself to start off.
Okay, well, I've never been in politics before. I'm actually a business owner. My husband and I, we own Jacobson Industries in Livonia.
Yeah.
Okay. We're a manufacturing company. We make mainly auto parts. I've worked in the company for over 22 years, and are we okay?
I'm gonna switch microphones here. I'm not hearing you loud and clear as I should. I think Kevin, what do you think?
Yeah, just a little bit soft.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Am I talking?
Yes.
Soft?
No, you're fine.
Oh,
tell us about yourself again. I'm still sweating profusely from walking in today, and I hit the wrong knob there. So my apologies. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So you want me to start again?
Well, okay. We know you're a Dearborn resident, and
right.
You have a family, and you're a small business owner.
Right.
What is that business?
It's Jacobson Industries in Livonia. Hmm. We're a manufacturing company. We make mainly auto parts. We've been in business since 1946.
Wow, that's great.
And it was it's a family company that was started by my husband's father after the war in 1946. And I joined about 22 years ago. I came from Volkswagen of America. Hmm. I was a corporate accountant there for a short period of time. And then before I left there, I was attached to the legal department where I designed and implemented their national arbitration program. So I have experience in the large corporate environment and now the small business environment. Our company actually has recovered from the financial crash. And I think if we don't have a recession next year, which I think we will, but if we don't, I think we're going to pass over that threshold from being a small company to a medium-sized company.
Hmm. Well, I have to say, just the continued existence of your company, Jacobson's Industries.
Jacobson Industries.
Jacobson Industries, named after the family name, of course. Yes. Because cars have changed so much since 1946, and all the ups and downs, new technology and competition from Volkswagen and others. You know, of course, you could sell parts to anyone you wanted to, I assume, right? But I don't know if you have exclusive contracts with some. But it's great that your company was able to keep innovating and providing what the companies needed over that long period of time. That is tough for a small business to.
Yeah, well, it started out as a steel rule die company and ran that way until 1970, when my husband took it over in the 70s. Then he switched to die cutting and automotive parts. Hmm. But it's tough. It's a tough industry making auto parts. And you have your cyclical up and down, ups and downs. You have your recessions. You have your model year changes. So you could see wide swings in your sales and your number of employees over the years. And, of course, we had to get through the financial crisis, which we weren't sure we were going to make it through that. But we did, and I think largely because a lot of our competition went out of business, we're doing better than ever.
Well,
yes.
That's great. And tell us about your education and your background. I especially would be interested, most people don't talk about how they chose to be a member of the political party they're in right now.
Well, education-wise, I have a bachelor's degree in accountancy from Walsh College in Troy, and did a short period of time as an accountant at Volkswagen. I don't have an extensive accounting background, but I use it extensively in our business. So it really did come in handy, especially since it was in manufacturing. As for becoming a member of the Republican Party, you know, I'm sort of the accidental politician. Running for public office never was on my career radar, but a sequence of events happened recently, and it just sort of pushed me forward into the political arena. And it started with the passage of the health care bill in 2010. And that at that point, that's when I realized that the people in Washington don't work for us anymore.
Oh, no, yeah. I agree.
Oh, good. Glad to agree.
That's, by the way, all the opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College, faculty, staff, students, or administrators. We always have to say that. That's
sure.
Not
yeah.
just Kevin's comment.
You've disclaimed but yourself.
Whenever we get a big opinion out, I decide to toss that in, and it's good for the whole hour. I don't have to say it again.
Yeah.
I guess I should ask you about the Health Care Act. You know, apparently Mitt Romney thought a very similar kind of mandate was a great idea for Massachusetts, and now he's, of course, saying he might be in favor of trying to vote out so-called Obamacare Act if he has enough political wherewithal after he's elected president, if he's elected president. What's your disagreement with, you know, many of the reforms that are part of that act? I mean, they're actually good things. So if you get sick, your company can't raise your rates and toss you out. There's actually quite a few valuable reforms. Personally, and I think our listeners know this too, I've said before, forcing people to buy health insurance and still not covering everybody, still about 10 million people won't be covered, even if that goes into effect in 2014, even if the others do buy insurance and they chose not to pay the penalty, which is the tax part. I'm not in favor of that kind of approach, even though I do think universal single-payer health care is good for all. And it should be there, even though it does generally raise taxes across the board. But to me, and you, please don't dispute my opinion, but it's just my humble opinion that certainly Obamacare, there's a lot of problems with it. That's how I see it from the outside. Even people in the Green Party and other progressives are actually not for it. It's interesting that there's a conservative on the far right and then libertarians in the middle and also progressives on the so-called far left that are not for most of the Obamacare provisions. But do you think it's worth a chance, though? I mean, do you think it's worth a chance to see how it actually implements? Because I've heard from health companies, health insurance companies, and the local hospitals, they're ready to go. They think it's all going to be great.
Oh.
I mean, seriously, I have never, I mean, I'm sure, I know there's, I, my own personal doctor is against the plan, but, you know, I haven't even been able to pay my own doctor for my bills in January because of the mess of bureaucracy that's keeping me from, I mean, I have the money to pay him, but I can't because they, if I don't work through the health care provisions and take my deductions, they'll, their accountant will be all messed up, and so they won't let me pay him real cash up front, and it's been 6 months now, and I feel sorry for him, except he's got a big practice, and he's willing to wait the year and a half to 2 years to get even Blue Cross Blue Shield to reimburse him. So the present system has a lot of problems for doctors, and he's worried about the future. Is that, did I touch on some of the things that you're concerned about in terms of the health care? And we don't have to go too long on that, but what are your primary upset about that?
Well, one, I don't understand why you can't pay your doctor. That I don't know what's going on.
It's an accounting thing. You should appreciate that. They're bill paying accountant. They don't. Well, they won't take people that don't have insurance. Do you ever hear doctors that do that? Yes, doctors. Oh. Many doctors, yes, will not take because they're on the system and they have to report everything and they have to use it. I mean, it really will confuse them to take cash and. They may even get some penalties, the way the system is set up right now. I've tried to talk to him. He's a very smart guy.
Any system that penalizes you for taking care of patients should be gotten rid of. Whatever the cause of that hiccup is for you should be done away with. Well, you should be able to get your health care and pay for it.
Right.
But with respect to the health care law, I'm glad. I wish it would go away, okay? I would have done something completely different and much simpler. I got to tell you, I ran the numbers, and what I would have done is far more affordable.
Okay.
Well, the first thing is, if you read the healthcare bill, the first five pages are great. It's got all the goodies, okay? Everything that everybody wants and needs. And you know what? I'm okay with those things.
But then it's that other 900 pages that aren't so great, right?
Well, what's worse than the other 900 pages are the probable 500,000 pages yet to come. Obamacare isn't written yet. Now it's turned over to the regulators. If you think we had uncertainty last week, now we really have uncertainty. And that is my biggest concern because they have turned this law over to the regulators. And they can write any rule, any regulation, and impose it on anyone and punish us if we don't follow it. But we don't know what they're going to write. And look at businesses, especially my business. I have 52 employees. Okay, my limit is really 49 under Obamacare. So what do I do with the other three? Okay. I mean, these are questions that we're asking.
There's still a lot to be worked out, and it may get worse, or it could get better, especially if you're elected to Congress. I think maybe we can pick and choose from, the bad side. Even Mitt Romney, in saying it wasn't for Obamacare, he went on to enumerate five good things that he wanted to keep. I mean, health reforms, actually. And, of course, I think the big question is how are you going to contain cost for the whole country? Because Obamacare's plan, as I understand, is not set up to limit costs, and whereas other systems can regulate, for example, Canada regulating the cost of prescription drugs, and of course a system that is nationwide can set limits on costs and expenses. Maybe we can improve it. It's good to have someone who's thinking of alternatives and changes. You know, I'm all for change because nothing is perfect. You know, I mean, we've got to work towards improving the things we have and putting other things in place. I'm upset, as I've talked on the show many times, about universal single payer. We never seem to go for the simplest approach. And of course, there'd be problems with every simple approach. But even, several conservatives who aren't in the running right now, they were for the Fair Tax Plan. Nationally, and that's a consumption tax. In fact, one of Mitt Romney's current advisors, although Romney hasn't come out for it, one of his economic advisors said a consumption tax, the Fair Tax Plan, which is I don't know if you're familiar with it or not. There's a proposal for a Michigan fair tax to replace income tax in Michigan. Would actually be a better answer. But it's so simple that everybody could understand it in about 5 minutes. Maybe it won't quite work, and there's bound to be some people who will be hurt every time you make it, put a new plan in place, whatever it is. It's going to cause some unintended consequences for a while at least. So I'm hoping that everybody will have courage enough to go for the better, more consistent plan. Whether it is 900 pages or not, the Obamacare plan is only going to get more complicated, and the reforms may get lost in the shuffle, and the good stuff may be outweighed by all the bureaucracy and additional costs. So I agree with your position on that. We've got to do something.
Do you want to know what I would do?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, go ahead. Okay. We have 15 more minutes.
Okay, good. Yeah, my biggest concern is that the poor and the elderly are not going to have access to health care. You can have all the health insurance in the world, but if you can't get to a doctor, it's useless. And under the Medicaid plan, they're going to have a very difficult time finding a good doctor. And then as the payments to the doctors go down for Medicare, the seniors are going to have a problem. That's my biggest concern. You can still have all those goodies that are in the first five pages of the health care bill, but I would stop there. What I would do is I would take all of those Medicaid people, people that are on Medicaid, and let's just work with a small group of people, well, a group of people. Let's work with the people that are on Medicaid right now, the uninsured who are poor, okay, and the working people who just don't want to buy insurance. Maybe they don't think they make enough money. What I would do is I would give them all of those those goodies, and then I would give those people a debit card and say, you go out and you buy your insurance on the open market. I offer health care to my employees. I took my plan under Blue Care Network, and I know what the premiums are, and I know what the coverage is. We have good coverage, no deductible, low copay. I have a primary care physician and hospital emergency care. Preventative care, it's all in there, and it's affordable to us. But I ran the numbers last night. I pulled the new numbers. Conservatively speaking, you could give debit cards to 60 million people today, and it would cost you at the most, and it's probably much less, $250 billion a year. And you can give them the same coverage my employees have, and my employees range from the working poor to middle class, including my husband and myself, and we have the same coverage. It is far easier. And you could, can you imagine if you dumped 60 million people into the private insurance market and you still guaranteed them coverage for pre-existing conditions or you can't be kicked out, which is a very important thing. And if you wanted to take it one step further, if you had patients with catastrophic injuries or illnesses, the government can do direct reimbursements for the catastrophic patients beyond what their insurance coverage covers, because that is an extremely small percentage of our whole population. That's what I would do. It's simple, it's effective, and it's affordable.
Yeah, the paperwork hassle. Again, I actually have a couple friends who are doctors, local doctors, small doctors, you know, with private practice. And right now the system is unbelievable for them. Besides the reimbursement taking a year and a half to 2 years, and they have to go quite hungry for the first year and a half or 2 years of their practice, you know, they only get a percentage. Blue Cross Blue Shield plays number games, and they do reduce the costs for the doctors. And theoretically, the doctor charges them, let's say, $200. Because it's a Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance request, they reduce the cost to $120. And of course, the patient never sees it. And all kinds of crazy stuff going on. And of course, there's problems with all the paperwork going through all the hands, you know. So even the present system really needs reform. But, you know, I agree with the idea of competition and free market up to a point, you know. And the system you talk about, just like the fair tax and others, you know, if you're going to keep it simple, you're going to reduce the cost. You have to have some safeguards in there, some supervision, regulation. Oh, it's a bad word. Sorry.
Well, it's reasonable. Regulation makes sense. Okay. But here's a great example. My primary care physician, these are the preventative care people. Mm-hmm. He said that he had to reduce his patient load by 20% just so he can fill out the electronic medical forms.
Yeah.
Now, 20% of his patients could have used his attention.
And they have to hire the extra person in the office, and they have to pay for the software and the computers.
Completely unnecessary.
Yeah. So that's the present system, and sure, it might get worse.
Ultimately, the rates that the doctors are paid, those are negotiated rates.
Mm-hmm.
And for years, they've accepted the negotiated rates. Now, if the Medicaid recipients and the poor who don't have insurance, that sort of a thing, if they had access to primary care physicians just like we do in our health care plan, which is what I would recommend, they would have all of that preventative care that the government's trying to push on us, and which is fine, but it's easy. You know, and I read people complain, oh, it's more complicated than that. No. It is not more complicated. It is just that simple.
Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Well, no, it's very important.
And don't get me started.
No, everybody you're going to be talking to throughout Dearborn and these other areas, although I don't like to ask you how you intend to campaign from Ann Arbor through Trenton. You know, it's a crazy, huge district, this long
L. On my tricycle.
Okay. Good for you. Okay. We're going to help hold back global warming.
Gas.
Let me ask you, let me go on my proposed list of questions here. Where do you stand with some of the Tea Party philosophies, and he's not necessarily a Tea Partyist, even though I know he's put some money into it. Grover Norquist is not elected official, but he's given a pledge out to congressmen these days and a vote to never raise tax or, by the way, even close tax loopholes, which he says is raising taxes. Would you take that pledge?
Probably not. I'm not closely aligned with the Tea Party movement, but I have to tell you, we should not raise a single penny of taxes and fund the general fund. I calculate they waste almost half of the money we send them. Until they stop wasting our money, they should not get a penny more. But I am in favor of raising taxes to support Medicare, and we need that 2% back on Social Security. President Obama should never have taken that 2% payroll tax away from Social Security. And I'm assuming that he's going to let that lapse and the 2% will go back into Social Security. I don't know yet. Well, but they waste too much of our money to get more of our money.
You know, the federal budget is about 40% in terms of the spending each year. And, of course, there's always debts to be paid for the money that we didn't have in the past. I mean, there's interest to be paid on that, and that's huge, too. What about the foreign wars? What about the military takes 40% of the budget?
Mm-hmm.
Is there some excess there that could be cut?
I don't know the inner workings of the Department of Defense budget itself so much, but if I had my way, we would be out of the Middle East yesterday. Okay, we don't need to be involved in the Middle East. And why we would be getting involved in Syria is beyond me. You know, enough is enough.
It hasn't been advertised much, but a month ago, President Obama was in Australia, and he announced and concluded agreements to set up a new base there. We never had a military base in Sydney, Australia. And I said, since I've been to Australia, it's a nice place for R&R, you know, if you've been fighting a war somewhere and you got to go mm-hmm. a nice beach and the sun. give me a break. Why do we need a base in Australia? And for that matter, most of the other places in the world. This is a rhetorical question. I just don't understand. And of course, we always get the stories about the military buying a wrench for $15,000 mm-hmm. or something, which is, you know, boggles the mind since it's not a better wrench than what you get at ACO or something. Mm-hmm. But there's got to be some monitoring. I mean, that's the largest part of our national expenses. And, you know, we pay more for military cost each year than all the other military countries, all the other military expenses in the whole world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, combined.
Well, yeah. you know, so. what I would do is I would try to get out of the wars first. But, okay, that aside, if you're going to cut military spending, I wouldn't do across-the-board cuts. When you do that, you end up cutting out good stuff and leaving the bad stuff. You really got to pick through it, and you've got to do it very slowly and considerately, very carefully.
Yeah, but everybody's going to fight tooth and nail, so...
Yeah. Well, in terms
I do
of,
agree with you.
Then you fight fully, tooth and fully. Nail. Right. That's what you do.
I fully agree, okay.
Yeah, that's politics. Once you get there and you start negotiating on bills and what you can pass or not, you're negotiating among the other politicians. And for their special interest, if it's a base in this country or munitions manufacturing, if they have a factory in their country, that's the real hard part. So as president of a company, is there a union representing your employees? Have you had to negotiate with a union or you don't have a union? Okay.
No.
But those are negotiations too, you know.
Although
politics doesn't always play by the same rules, unfortunately.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's collective bargaining rules actually in place that people are supposed to follow, and politics,
I think in a broader way, the way I look at it, if I were presented with a proposal or an initiative, I would ask myself, does this add value to the lives of all Americans? Okay, because that's what our federal government does. They're supposed to work for all of us, not their special interests, not the people that get them elected. They work for all of us, even though in your district, you know, you representing your district, when you vote in Congress, you're voting for everybody. So with respect to the base in Australia, I would have to ask why. You know, why are you doing this first? And you know, does it add value to our lives? I don't know at this point. I don't know the answer. But you have to ask those questions. If it is a matter of special interest and getting more money to get reelected, then it's probably not in the best interest of all Americans.
Mm-hmm. Well, we only have about 5 minutes left in our discussion with Karen Jacobson, Republican for U.S. Congress, 12th District. And it's an important time to vote. I know it may be hot out there, and August 7th may be hotter even. And you may try to take a vacation somewhere on there, but you do an absentee ballot. That's easy to do. And just go see the city clerk's office or get a ballot application in the mail. They'll send you the form. Again, registration. If you're not registered to vote yet, if you've never registered before, get to city clerk's office by this coming Monday. You could do it today, this afternoon, probably for a couple more hours, or Monday the 9th. That's the deadline for registering to vote in the August 7th election. So let me jump to this question, one of the last two. Why should a voter support you in the Republican primary on August 7th rather than your opponent? And we don't want to get negative. In fact, you even said in a press release yesterday that you try to stay away from calling people names, but differences between you and the candidate, would you want to speak about that?
Well, I'm really running on new ideas and my experience. I'm not running taking her into account. I want to fix I'm a problem solver. This is what we do in business, and we tend to look forward. I want to take my skills to Washington to see if we can fix the problems out there. I really can't comment about Cynthia. I don't know that much about her, as a matter of fact. I'm coming into this with new ideas that are mine.
That's great. And how can people find out more about yourself and your campaign? Your campaign manager, Michael Stroud, is with us today, too. I'm sure you have a plan, and we can't go into that because it's a huge district. You're going to try to be out and about and meet people. I know you have a website. I hope I got it correct. I'll mention it afterwards. Is it KarenJ2012.com?
Yes.
Okay, so that's KarenJ, just the letter J, not like my name, J-A-Y. Mm-hmm. Karen J for Jacobson, of course, 2012.com. That's your website. And any upcoming personal appearances or speaking engagements, say, in the next couple of weeks?
Well, Michael is taking care of that.
Okay.
You know, I have to tell you, just before we go,
mm-hmm.
I am having so much fun. Do you know the best part of this whole campaign is going door to door? People told me at the beginning, you know, it's such a drag. It is so much fun. I go out every day except for when it's 100 degrees. And the people are great. They are really nice. So I have to tell you, I'm going to be going door to door nonstop. And but to answer that question, we do have the Trenton Midsummer Festival that we're going to be appearing at.
That's coming. Is that in a week or so? Michael's nodding. 14th. The 14th. Oh, yeah, okay. I saw that. It's going to be big, 14 and 15. And
yes.
You're going to be down there. It's a Saturday the 14th. We're going to be at Concert of Colors, folks, but and that's a big music fest, too. But it's really good. I'm not sure if Trenton has done that in the past. Have they done that? You know, yeah? Okay, good for them. We have a couple WHFR staff members from there, and one is even a businessman down there, so maybe he helped pull that together. Well, that's always good. And Dearborn Homecoming, hope to see you out there.
Yes,
that's
definitely.
August 3, 4, and 5, if you can stand the heat. we'll be there 10 hours each day, so look for our blue and white tent. Karen Jacobson, running for Congress as a Republican, 12th District. You have a choice in the primary August 7th to vote Democrat or Republican. There may be some other things on the ballot that are nonpartisan. There's some judgeship races in Dearborn, 19th District, that are significant. So you definitely want to think about the issues. Also, I almost forgot that Tri-County Area Ballot Proposal to support the DIA, the Detroit Institute of Arts. Yay or nay, folks. And there may be some other things. So you do want to vote. You do want to consider all the candidates well. And we just thank Karen Jacobson very, very much for coming by the Journal today. And good luck to you at getting all your message out.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Have a good one.
We're going to be listening now to a couple comments from Jim Hightower, our friendly progressive out of Texas. You remember Montana?
As a Montana newspaper editorial succinctly put it, "The greatest living issue confronting us today is whether the corporations shall control the people or the people shall control the corporations." That was written in 1906 as Montanans were rising up against out-of-state mining corporations known as the Copper Kings. These corporate powers were exploiting Montana's workforce, extracting its public resources, and routinely extending bribes to control its government. In 1912, however, the people passed the Corrupt Practices Act, a citizens' initiative that outlawed direct corporate expenditures in elections for state office. The law broke the Copper King's legislative chokehold, and a century later, it was still working to put people power over money politics. Even today, the average cost of state Senate races in Montana stands at only $17,000. Allowing candidates to spend more time talking to everyday folks, and that produces one of America's highest rates of voter turnout. How positive! A model of democracy in action. Until an out-of-state corporate front group rode in like Copper Kings to sue the state. With a pack of high-dollar lawyers and a bundle of corporate funding, the group wailed that Montana's anti-corruption law discriminates against poor corporations, denying them their First Amendment right to have the biggest voice in government that money can buy. And now, the five corporate hacks controlling the Supreme Court have ratified the ridiculous argument of the front group, imperiously shoving Montana's law into the ditch and reimposing the rule of special interest money over the people's will. This is Jim Hightower saying, to stop this court's coup against our democracy, we the people must pass a constitutional amendment overturning these decisions. To help, go to unitedforthepeople.org. United, the number four, thepeople.org.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Food fight, everyone! Let's all join the fun. Actually, this is neither fun nor a fight that America's consumers and organic food producers wanted to be in. But we've been forced into it by a cabal of corporate profiteers and their government enablers. For 20 years, they've plotted to hurl fields full of spoiled food at us, including corn, soybeans, cereals, bread, and snacks. These foods have been spoiled by corporate geneticists rejiggering the very DNA of our foodstuffs. They've taken genes from other species, including animals and bacteria, and artificially slipped the foreign material into nature's own healthy products. The industry asserts that these genetically engineered crops increase farm yields and make food cheaper. But in fact, GE yields are down and grocery prices are up. The real purpose of DNA engineering has simply been to create plants that absorb more pesticides. Excuse me, but if these tampered products are so great, why are the big food manufacturers who use them not bragging about that wonderful fact to shoppers? They should be running ads shouting, "Hey, we've got GEs in here." Instead, they've conspired behind closed doors with lawmakers and regulators to keep consumers in the dark about any GE ingredients inside the products. This is Jim Hightower saying, this brings us to the Big Food Fight. A coalition of consumers, organic advocates, nutritionists, and others have successfully put the Right to Know Genetically Engineered Food initiative on California's November election ballot. It would require food from GE crops to be labeled as such. Spooked by the very thought of consumer disclosure, an array of corporate giants are now flooding money and lies into the state to defeat the people's fundamental right to know what's in their food. To join the fight for honesty, go to carighttoknow.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Hello and welcome back to the new WHFR Journal. Actually, I never left. Did you leave? I hope not. Jim Hightower's comment about what's in our food and fight for the right kind of healthy food. And, of course, the poor people in Montana there, they were trying to limit corporate influence, buying elections, being able to buy TV commercials that lie to you. Why? Because they got the money to do so. Okay? And there's no law against that kind of lying, which is shocking. Let me get the right mic for you. There you go.
I was just going to say, sounds kind of familiar up here with that. Yeah.
Well, you see, there's been a trend to trying to fight what it was called Citizens United. In other words, should a corporation have a right to free speech? And also indirectly, then, corporations can spend as unlimited amounts of money. You know, in a way, that's not fair because I know I have a personal limit of $250.
Yeah.
In contributing during primaries to different political candidates. I'm an individual. You mean I don't have freedom of speech that's unlimited in terms of money? Of course, I don't have the money. But, you know, so the people in Montana and other places, they passed their own laws saying that corporations are not people. And, of course, the Supreme Court, when they said that Obamacare was legal, said that that's illegal, that corporations can spend as much money as they want to. I think they have to prove that they're telling the truth, too. I'm sorry. I mean, I know that's only the only law that requires you to tell the truth is when you're giving testimony in an official court setting. We had to take the pledge to speak the truth. I think somebody ought to take the pledge before they put a commercial on the air, especially a political commercial, any kind of commercial, that they're telling the truth, you know. And then, of course, there'll be plausible deniability, and it'll only be the truth as they know it. And if there's anything wrong with the product or the candidate, nobody tells them. So there's all kinds of ways to get around the laws like that. But isn't it unfair? I think it is. We really need a Congress as a whole, even though they're cutting off their own purse strings, to vote to overturn that Citizens United. The corporations are not people. I think that should be obvious. They don't have a right to free speech, unlimited, whereas individuals, it's not unlimited, and therefore influence elections unduly to the direction of just one person at the top of the corporation who decides where the money goes. And rich people, for that matter, whether they're part of a corporation or not, most of them are because they get a better tax rate if they're part of a corporation. And so, rich people... they might know something good, might know something bad, but it's not democracy, folks, is it? You know, we're supposed to listen to everybody. We're supposed to, well, first of all, try to educate everybody, which, of course, with the cuts to education is not happening. But then, oh my gosh, we let just a few people who happen to be very rich tell us what the truth is and then also influence and sway us by telling lies to who to vote for if we do vote. And if you don't vote, well... Even if you believe a few lies out there, folks, you're still missing out on influencing the system. Why? Because even in this primary coming up August 7th, we'll be lucky to get 20% of the registered voters.
Yeah.
What a lot of power for those people that vote. Okay, so, and for president, well, we might get more than 50% of the registered voters voting in November. Usually it's 60 to 70. I think it was close to 70% in 2008. when Obama was elected. There was a lot of grassroots support there for both sides that turned out new voters. Not too sure about this fall. A lot of people are turned off by the Democrats and the Republicans. And that's why here on the new WHFR Journal, we'll try to cover, as we have every year, the candidates who are from third parties. Ooh, third parties. That's right. And two great parties that are not necessarily left or right, depending on how you look at it. The Green Party, they just want a clean environment, clean, healthy environment for everybody. I guess that's kind of left-wing populist. Shame on them for wanting a clean, healthy environment for everybody. And then, of course, libertarians. And I wanted to mention, I've had this news for the last couple of weeks. And since CNN has chosen not to cover any third parties ever, one of the major news networks, yeah, and I've always been mad at the New York Times, not for reasons you might think, but that's because they have chosen over the years. Even when Ralph Nader was a Green Party candidate for president back in 2000, a little paragraph buried way back in Section A or B, nothing on the front page ever. And in 2000, Green Party was on the ballot in 48 states. And is there anything wrong about what they stand for? You know, if you look at the 10 principles of the Green Party, I think most people would say, yeah, I agree with those principles. Yeah. The problem is, of course, how you implement them. That's always the issue. But, you know, clean air, clean water, health care for all.
Okay. There comes that corporate influence again.
I know. But, you know, I'm just saying it's very...
it's worthwhile.
Worthwhile to vote, first of all, and find out about these people. Okay, well, here's the big news about the Libertarian Party, which is the third largest political party in Michigan and in the United States. And they will be on all 50 ballots, by the way, so they'll definitely be here in Michigan. Gary Johnson. Heard about him before? Gary Johnson is the Libertarian Party candidate for President of the United States. He's, and this is way back in May, so the story has stayed in my folder since then. He had been governor of New Mexico, not Mexico, folks, New Mexico. You know, it's next to Arizona. Okay.
Yeah. And two times, right?
Yeah, two times, so 8 years. And he was sort of shut out of the Republican debates when he had an idea he wanted to run for president. They shut out a sort of liberal Republican, too, from Alaska that was a governor up there, not Sarah Palin, obviously. And so he was so miffed, and he's always been a little bit out of the mainstream of the Republican Party. So he turned and became a libertarian, and he's now their official nominee for president. So Gary Johnson. He lives in one of my favorite cities in the United States, by the way, in Taos, New Mexico, which is a cute little artist community. It has a lot of snow in the winter and some ski hills, but also it's got a lot of artists that live there, and there is a big Walmart. But he is an unwavering crusader for fiscal responsibility, free enterprise, and individual freedoms. And if you want to learn more about Gary Johnson, yes, he has an easy website, Gary Johnson, that's Johnson, like you might expect, 2012.com. Okay, Gary Johnson. Or Libertarian Party. Say, well, what is that? I didn't know what they stand for. Okay, their catchphrase these days is minimum government, maximum freedom. They are for liberty. Get that? Libertarian, they are for liberty, which is not, remember, it's not just freedom to do anything you want to do. Liberty has responsibilities, but still, and they are not left or right. You say, well, they're very right-wing then. No, they're not. A few of their principles are, but like, let's see, Karen Jacobson, she agreed with libertarian politics, which is to get us out of foreign wars.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'm just saying, okay, there's things that are... And of course, he wants the fair tax that I mentioned. That's one of his top priorities, is to do away with the entire income tax and put a national consumption tax. But it's better than just consumption. He said, well, he's going to raise the taxes on most everything we're going to buy. And what is that amount? I'll scare you here, folks, okay, if you haven't heard this before. It'll go up to effectively about 30%. Now, 30% tax across the board nationally, but you would have no income tax. You know, all that withholding that comes out of your check every week, if you're lucky enough to get a check, gone, okay? And what about the poor people? Okay, this is where the fair tax is fair, because the people at the poverty level and above, everybody, they get a rebate check, or actually a a prebate check, because every month you get a check from the government to reimburse you for the taxes you'd probably have to pay for room and board and food up to the poverty level. So what percent would be the taxes you'd pay up to the poverty level? So everybody, rich and poor, would get those prebate checks. And so that would balance out for the poor people that extra cost that's going to be there on the necessities of life for them. But imagine, no filing income taxes, no paperwork, okay, no IRS, all those expenses gone. And as we've said on the show before, I mean, they're still trying to put a Michigan fair tax in place, which would only be for Michigan, and it would replace our 6% sales tax with a 9.75% fair tax, and we never had to pay income tax again in Michigan. We'd all get the prebate checks. There'd be no withholding for state taxes anymore from our paycheck. And you say, well, but in bad economic times, people will stop buying. No, no. What happens in bad economic times is home values go down. And that means property taxes drop down to almost nothing. So the most stable tax for good and bad times is a consumption tax.
Now, I lived down south for 6 years, as I've said a few times here on the show. But Tennessee, I lived 16 miles into North Carolina from Tennessee, and Tennessee had that. They don't have state sale or income tax down there. They pay a little bit higher on their state tax.
Sales tax.
Their
sure.
sales tax. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But everything is so much cheaper down there.
Well, that compensates then, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, I mean,
cost of living is lower. Yeah,
a dollar a gallon cheaper down there than it is up here right now. Groceries are cheaper, so it works out. Works out really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, that would in that case. But, of course, with the prebate checks, whatever your cost of living is across the U.S., that'll sort of balance out. And that, again, is something that... the Republican who has one of the talk shows from a former governor from Arkansas, he's on Fox. Do you know the guy? This is a political test for you, Kevin. Okay.
Whoops.
Is it Mike, what's his name?
Huckabee.
Huckabee, yes. Okay, when he campaigned for president, he was all for the fair tax. He even wrote a whole book explaining why he's for the fair tax. And this idea has been around for 20 years. Even Harvard University documented several big studies about 10 years ago. It'll work, folks. It'll work. It'll. And talk about, you know, making things simpler and easier to understand. And you say, well, why that 30%? Why can't we do it less? Well, right now they think that would balance the amount of income the government's getting from these taxes and all the expenses that will be saved. So that's the replacement cost. But it gives you a wonderful target. If you were for lowering taxes or bringing more efficiency into government, everybody can see that tax every day, that fair tax, because they're buying stuff. You know, that extra 30% is on top. And you say, well, that's an awful lot. Yeah, but if you didn't, do you know how much withholding they're holding back, folks? I get Social Security. Okay, I'm lucky enough to be extremely old, and I love Social Security. But they're taxing my Social Security that's been saved up. Yeah,
I mean,
the federal government.
Yeah. They were allowed to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the state of Michigan doesn't, but you know, so, and when I take out my annuities, they're going to tax those. Why? For the income tax. Well, if there is no income tax, which is anywhere from, well, Mitt Romney's 15% up to about 28%, if there is no income tax, you don't have to pay that amount, okay? So it's there for you. So that more than compensates, along with the prebate checks, that extra cost there. And I think it also makes you a wiser shopper, if certainly on the changeover there, you're a much wiser shopper, because you know that... Yes, it's true, folks. The car will cost 30% more. Sorry, folks.
I don't even think they would have to raise it that much. I see 20, 25 maybe.
Well, as they say, since it's not an add-on,
yeah.
It's supposedly part of the purchase price. So it's called an inclusive tax. And it actually works out to less than the 30%. But some the people that don't like the proposal, I thought I might as well give the worst number. But because it's included when you buy it, not added on top of it. It's not 30% on top of your car. And because, and guess what? All you business people out there, Karen would like this for her Jacobson's Enterprises, they don't have to pay any taxes when they buy materials for their own company. So business to business. And they wouldn't have to pay corporate income tax either. I know it's hard to believe, but they would have to, as individuals, pay taxes. Now, okay, there, I can see Kevin is alert here. There's all kinds of things, but I've read several books on this. Books, folks, that's many pages bound together, you know. And I, over the years, I've talked to the experts and the researchers and economists. And Mitt Romney's not come out for it yet, but Huckabee was on top of that. Herman Cain with his 999 proposal.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, upside down, it's the mark of the devil. But anyway, the 999 was a way to get to what he really wanted, which was fair tax. 99 would be a transitionary period, and you'd have to transition it. You know, I mean, even Obamacare is being phased in. You've got to transition.
You can't just jump into the cold water.
No, no. It's you get people that get used to it and think about it and plan for how to accommodate themselves best and so on. But so Herman Cain was for the fair tax. Mike Huckabee. Everybody loves Huckabee. Is it Huckabee?
Yeah.
Huckabee. Huckabee.
Is it Huckabee or Huck? No, Huckabee, yeah, it is Huckabee.
Huck Finn, no, it's Huckabee, yeah, buzz buzz, it's Huckabee, and of course Gary Johnson now has taken the support for this. He's also for, okay, I got to say something negative about them. This is fair and balanced here, just like CNN. Yeah. No, it isn't, because they won't touch, they won't even talk about Gary Johnson, or the soon to be, I believe she'll be the nominee for Green Party president. And that's Dr. Jill Stein. Now, they haven't had their nominating convention yet. That's July 16th through the 22nd in beautiful Baltimore.
Yeah, I'd say it's almost pretty much
the polls
up.
Say within the Green Party members that she's about 70%. Her only competition is Roseanne Barr. Yeah, the comedian, yes. But she's serious about it, and she's got some money that, you know, she's made. But still, most of the support is for Dr. Jill Stein, and we hope to have. We have feelers out there, thanks to Kevin's work, to Governor Johnson, already got our initial press conference contact that he was almost available today, they thought.
Yeah, but we already
for an hour.
Booked
but
up.
Karen was here. We go local first if we can. But each year we have sort of a tradition, at least every 4 years, and we've always gotten the third-party candidates for president on this show. Okay, it was vice president. The Green Party was only able to get us their vice presidential candidate in 2008. But close enough, right? A heartbeat away from who might be the president. So we'll continue trying to get those scheduled between now and November, of course, and find out more about all these parties. GP.org for the Green Party and LP for the Libertarian Party.org, and specifically Gary Johnson's website, the Libertarian Party nominee, has actually a lot more on it specifically about him than the Libertarian Party website does right now. So Gary Johnson, 2012. com. He's a candidate to think about and to listen to bring about significant and very good changes for everybody. And just, you know, get into it, folks, okay? Politics, don't let them control us. You need to control them. And the only way you can do it is to find out what's really happening here. Today is not only a heat alert day, but also an ozone alert day. Ozone, heart of the matter. This just came out on Science News website this week ago, Tuesday, June 26. And it was just reported because people were saying, you know, they don't call it Ozone Alert Day for nothing. But apparently it's now the scientists have totally proven it, that breathing elevated ozone levels can mess with the cardiovascular system, potentially putting vulnerable populations such as the elderly and persons with diabetes or heart disease at heightened risk of heart attack, stroke, and sudden death from arrhythmias, which your heart doesn't beat regularly. And you might say, is this really new? Yes, that information is. The Environmental Protection Agency toxicologist studies poisons, led a new study among the chief priority air pollutants affecting human health that his agency regulates are ozone and near nanoscale particles, that's really small, called PM for particulate matter. Although air pollution can affect the heart, there's been a longstanding question about which constituents deserve the blame. Well, ozone, okay? And they thought for years that ozone was appeared fairly wimpy. It could aggravate your asthma, but no big deal. Well, now they've totally proven that ozone mortality data, and in fact, it's been that data has come out since 2004, for 8 years now. Okay, and So where is it coming from? Okay. Well, of course, it's coming from business and industry, the coal industries. And yes, cars, that's the number two. You know, internal combustion engines or ICE engines. I don't need some ICE today, please. No, that's a different kind of ICE. But internal combustion, the old gasoline-powered cars, a ton of ozone. But it's business and industry, and especially the power generation plants that are producing it. Not nuclear power, but with nuclear, you know, there's that problem in 20 to 30 years, what you're going to do with all the radioactive material, and we don't have an answer for that yet, so we better not play games with that either. So stay indoors today if you can. Try to, you know, stay out of the hot sun. Drink a lot of water. Water's a good thing for you. Soft drinks, not so much in hot weather.
Not in this kind of weather.
And what about those alcoholic beverages? No. That's not going to help you that much either. Sorry to say.
Make dehydration worse.
Cold beer. Yeah, well, okay, the cold is okay. The cold beer is fine if you just hold it up to your forehead. But if you're going to be drinking it, it's not going to actually keep you cooler. Although you may eventually get so numb.
Or hydrated. It'll cause you to dehydrate quicker.
Right, yeah. Because you remember the number one activity of people that drink a lot of beer? That's right. They go to the bathroom, don't they? And we can't go into details on the air here, but I think you know what I mean, folks. Okay. So that's our other headline for today, since it's going to be 100 degrees, folks, in beautiful Dearborn. Dearborn, get that?
Burn. Yeah, it does feel like it's burning out there. Yeah. The whole melting thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, what else is happening quickly? Because Highway 61 is going to start promptly in a couple of minutes today. We have a couple of guest DJs. Joanne Korchinska is up north in northern Michigan and getting a well-deserved break here. And it's probably warm up there. She's in a cabin with no electricity.
Oh, I heard on the way in on the weather there was like 93 or 5 up there.
Yeah, I think she's closer to Petoskey or somewhere.
It's near Alpena.
Well, it's a log cabin. I know log cabins can be sort of cool if they're shaded enough, but anyway, she's getting some R&R, and that's good. So yours truly is going to be with you for the next 2 hours, and we're going to do Zydeco today because it can't get any hotter, so I decided to get it even a little hotter by listening to some Zydeco music, and so burn off those calories indoors. Why don't you dance to the music indoors? And then at 4 to 6 o'clock, one of our other WHR Blues DJs are coming in, and they'll be holding down the fort here at that point in time. In the press, local Dearborn Press and Guide and Times Herald, it's always with a big holiday in the middle of the week, sort of a slow time for news. But if it matters, we do have a new official fire chief. His name is Joseph Murray here in Dearborn. And I think... his contract is going to be voted on this coming Monday, officially by the city council. He has done graduate work discovering why, get this, Arab Americans are not volunteering for the fire department much. Discrimination patterns or whatever. And so we want all kinds of good firefighters, you know, just like it used to be for some terrible reason years ago, a lot of Irish people became policemen. Is it 1920s or whatever, okay, 100 years ago. But certain occupations became known as, being one ethnic group or another. And that might, you know, in a very diverse society, might question how serious they are about saving someone, either for fire or some other problem. And it shouldn't necessarily. You're a professional or you're not, I think. But nonetheless, there people can jump to contusions, as I say. So we got a new fire chief who's definitely going to try to be very inclusive. Hopefully we won't have to fire any full-time employees because of budget reasons. We have a constitutional protection against that, a charter protection against that. We'll see how that goes. Residents and officials discuss options for the Hemlock Pool's future. That's one of the pools in Dearborn that are currently closed. They closed two last year. Well, there was, I think, Whitmore Bowls or something. And I don't know where the Hemlock Pool is, but the fact it's closed now, could it reopen? The city has said yes if people, about 1,000 people in the nearby neighborhood, actually want to vote for it. Now, I thought that whole voting on a ballot proposal for the people in certain pool neighborhoods was not going to happen. I know the Save Our Pools group were not in favor of it. They didn't think it was clear enough about who's going to decide what in the future about those rates and so on. But there's a whole discussion. Check it out for yourself. Dearborn Times Herald from July 4th edition that apparently people in the Hemlock neighborhood may get that option. And I'm not sure whether that's November or what.
Boy, I wish they bet they had it today with this heat.
Mm-hmm. Dearborn Schools okay the budget for next year, but they don't really know because the state of Michigan has been fooling around as usual, and they don't have an actual budget yet. So if the state of Michigan cuts more, and they say they probably won't, but if they do, city of Dearborn will have to cut more. But I got this comment, and this is on page 1A of the Press and Guide from last Sunday. They had talk among the Board of Education members about anti-bullying. Last year in the Dearborn Public Schools, there was 919 incidents of bullying.
919?
That were reported and had to be adjudicated somehow.
So there's probably three times more than that that's reported.
That's unbelievable. Of course, I know they're calling bullying almost anything, like a single word spoken, whether it's racist or sexist or ageist or whatever, you can get called a bully under our present regulations kind of easily, but maybe appropriately. 919. So they think that's going to drop this year because they've been working against that and having all those informative meetings, at which the first one, if you remember, Kevin, last year,
right,
a bunch
Dearborn
of parents showed up and started bullying the school board members, yelling and screaming at them from the audience. So not a good example for the kids, but they felt enough wasn't being done for anti-bullying, so they were acting like bullies towards it.
Yeah,
boggles
the
mind.
Not as I do.
They obviously don't know what bullying is. But we do want to thank, we're going to close the show now, we do want to thank Karen Jacobson, candidate for Republican nomination as congressperson to Washington, D.C. in the 12th District for coming by today. And be sure to register. Get your friends to register. They have through Monday at your local city clerk's office. And then don't forget to vote on August 7th.
Stay cool, everybody.
We'll try to. And we'll be back here again next Friday on the new WHFR Journal. It's WHFR Dearborn. Thanks, Kevin.
Hey, have a good one.